From the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, KUAR Public Radio brings you Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought, with your host, Phil Marriage. Welcome to the Crossroads of History.
Hi, I'm Phil Marriage, and before we get into the program this evening, I want to bring those of you who missed last week's program up to date. The topic this evening is part two of our discussion on surveillance. Part one is posted on our KUAR program page, and part two will be posted this evening also. Over the 13-plus years we've been on the air here at KUAR, we've covered many controversial topics, as you know if you're a regular listener. Most of those in their longer podcast version are about an hour in length, as was this one. As I began to edit it down for our half-hour time, I began to think that this topic on surveillance reaches every one of us in one way or another, in an ever-increasing degree of concern, and my guests covered a tremendous amount of issues. I decided to go ahead and break it down into these two segments so that you, the listener, could hear it all. We begin this evening's part two where we left off last week. I've added the introductions back into the segment to refresh your memory on all three of my guests, so I hope you enjoy this expanded generational discussion on surveillance yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another 2013 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here in Little Rock. I'm Phil Marriage, your host. Glad you guys can join us here this afternoon on what I think is going to be a very lively discussion about a very hot topic in the news today. And before we get into that, I do want to remind you that if you'd like to listen to the longer version of our program, you can catch the podcast version on KUAR.org. You just have to click on Programs, go all the way to the very end under Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, and you'll find our link there to this particular program. Also, we're on iTunes if you're into that at all. Our topic here today, surveillance. And as I was thinking about this topic over the last few weeks coming up, and in fact, all of you listening today probably have been somewhere today, even if you're not right now, someplace where you have been under surveillance of some sort anyway. And it's really not like the old days where you watch the gangster movie or the cop movie where they're sitting in the car watching across the street or watching two flights up. Surveillance means entirely different things today than it did before. And that's what we want to talk today about from our generational perspectives. My three guests with me here today, joining me here in the studio, speaking from the older generation, is Dr. Art English. He's been on the program several times before. He's a distinguished professor emeritus in political science here at UALR. Dr. English, glad to have you back again.
Nice to be here, Phil.
And then also in the studio with me here, speaking from the younger generation perspective, a name you've heard quite often in the last several months around the Little Rock area anyway, Adam Lansky. He's speaking from that younger generation, and he's been one of the central figures in the Occupy movement here in Arkansas, and he's had some special experiences with surveillance from that movement's activities too. Adam, glad to have you with us here.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Phil.
And then joining us from Arlington, Virginia is Jay Stanley. He's speaking from that middle generation perspective. He's a senior policy analyst with the ACLU's Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project, and I've read several of his blog items that he's put on the ACLU site. He's written extensively about the issues of surveillance. Jay Stanley, so glad to have you joining us here in Little Rock today.
Thanks for having me on.
But of course, I do know that it has increased substantially, I mean, in terms of cameras everywhere. I think England, particularly, mm-hmm. interestingly enough, has been a country which has had tremendous amounts of cameras and surveillance, you know, there. And so, you know, when you are walking someplace, when you're jogging someplace or so forth, you're under scrutiny. And that is kind of weird for the, you know, the 1984 Orwellian generation that I was part of.
Did you ever think that would be a reality when that first came out?
No, not to this degree. I, you know, 1984 came and went, and it, you know, when I was reading that book, it was when I was in high school, and it was the late 50s or early 60s or something like that, you know, and I said, my, 1984, that's a long way away, and now it, you know, it came and went. And
now it's a long way back, isn't
now
it?
Now it's 30 years in arrears and so forth. I'll tell you why I think it's a concern, because we have to remember, it's not just the cameras. It's not just the drones. It's not just the data files. It's the people who are managing these and amassing this data. If those people do not adhere to democratic norms, as the younger generation individual here, Mr. Lansky, was talking about, he was talking about the Constitution. If they don't really, you know, respect the idea of a reasonable expectation of privacy, the idea of First Amendment freedoms, your Bill of Rights and things like that, if that somehow grows dim in the arrears of history, so to speak, of their general, you know, I don't know what would happen at that particular point. I mean, you know,
That's today.
Yeah, bad things can happen to people because bad people are making them happen.
Well, Jay Stanley, is that the kind of the crux of the work that you've been involved with in talking about surveillance?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think it was Madison or one of our founding fathers said, you know, if men were angels, we wouldn't need checks and balances. Now we're reaching the point where technology has got to the point where we can all be watched all the time, as if we had our own personal police officer following us around 24/7, which I think would freak most people out. Police departments around the country, for example, are installing license plate readers, which automatically take pictures of license plates that drive by. They can do like thousands of license plates an hour. It can reveal where you worship and what political groups you might visit, or union activities, or who your friends and lovers are. You know, anything that's going on in your life, location information will reveal that. And at the same time that we have this powerful technology that reveals so much about us, we have this giant national security establishment, which has been revealed today in the Washington Post, just the dimensions of it, which is a very powerful bureaucratic force, which is pushing to collect more and more information, more about more and more people. And, you know, we have some big decisions to make as a country, whether we want to allow our government to have that amount of power using these new technologies.
Well, just this week, going back a few days, and in fact, even today, there's been a couple of stories on NPR involving some concerns about surveillance in mosques and driving and that sort of thing. But then a few days ago, Clarence B. Jones, who was a speechwriter for Dr. King, was interviewed, and many of you listening probably heard that interview, and he was saying that if he had any concern about what he might have said during that period of time, the FBI has written it down already, what he was saying to Dr. King in conversations, phone and otherwise, from 1963 to 1967. All he has to go back is look at the transcripts, and he can doesn't have to worry about what if he remembers or not. It's already written down. So we are going back quite a bit of time. Adam Lansky, let me take you to the question that is begging me anyway. Are we just looking at the tip of the iceberg, to use that phrase, in the way of what Jay Stanley has talked about and also what Dr. English has talked about? Is surveillance bigger than, is it already too big as far as your generation is concerned?
That's a really great question. I think that every passing second is another chance to turn it all around, you know, and I think that could be your personal life, and I think that could be a political life of a nation or a world. I don't think the cat is out of the bag. I do think this is a game of chess, and I do think that my generation definitely needs to collectively determine what we see as the future and work in that direction. What we need to recognize is what's at stake here, though, and that's the right for human beings to be able to freely communicate in our communities and over distance. So for the internet, for example, what this has given us is the ability to amplify imagination, connect simultaneously to large numbers of other humans, and the possibility, which is rapidly shrinking, of allowing us to collaborate to reorganize our economic, social, and spiritual freedoms. Unless we can challenge these forces at their core by simultaneously engaging these corporations, as we discussed, that are doing data mining, meanwhile advocating that free communication is a 21st century human right, our dreams of personal sovereignty will forever be squashed. So if the powers that be increase their force, we have to increase our resistance. We need to find creative ways to use their forward force to expand our alliances and deepen our resolve, decrease their internal cohesion and resolve, and you know, in the end, achieve success as we see it without sowing the seeds of future conflict, okay? The clock is definitely ticking, but I think we're at a stage where we're only really now at an age where we can begin to politically engage the rest of the world. So I think that really it's going to be on us. The information is all out there. We have our heroes in the situation. Sadly, they're all either dead in prison or on the run out of the country right now. In particular, I'm talking about Michael Hastings, Barrett Brown, Ed Snowden, and PFC Bradley Manning. So these guys have done their part. I'm 29. Snowden's 29. Manning's 25. Hastings is 32. Barrett's 33. There are still things we can do, and we have a lot of technology at our fingertips, talking about groups like Anonymous, groups like Occupy that are working together, that are really, as my generation sees it, the forefront of our resistance to what we do see as tyranny. We still have to get the word out, though. And what makes it difficult, again, is we are combating a media infrastructure and a social infrastructure that is so deeply rooted. Anyone who opposes it, either at a physical level or intellectual level, is immediately incarcerated or really just painted as insane. So I do think that there's opportunity for change, but we have to build on the momentum we have so far, and we do have to educate ourselves. We do have to take Dr. English's class, because if we fail to learn from the past, we're going to repeat those mistakes.
Well, Dr. English, as you listen to a younger generation person and think about our history, does the younger generation, as Adam is talking about here, do they stand a chance to turn this around if indeed it needs to be turned around?
I mean, again, that's a great question. I don't know. I'm very concerned about what's taken place the last several years, because as Adam has said, I think I had more faith in the Obama administration to actually decentralize some of these powers and to take a closer look at it. But I think what's happened is that the presidency has become so powerful. The infrastructure, the homeland security support and that kind of thing, the fear of terrorism is so great that it seems to overwhelm sometimes our concern for individual liberties and civil liberties and things of that sort. You know, there are those groups out there that Jay represents, the ACLU, that, you know, can bring suit under these conditions. And the interesting part of it, though, if you're part of Occupy or if you're part of one of these groups, or certainly if you're part of what sometimes was referred to as the ACLU, then, you know, you're automatically working from a perspective of people saying, you know, those guys, you know, they don't really, they're not really helping us. They're just kind of radicals and stuff like that. I mean, it was the ACLU who took up the cudgels of the Nazi marches in Jewish areas of Skokie back in the, I think it was about 1980, if I'm not mistaken. Incredible, defending the right of free expression and things of that sort. It's these kinds of norms that are extremely important that sometimes we lose sight of. You know, so I don't know. What is the balance between, you know, national security, terrorism, surveillance, and individual liberty? It is my mentor there, so to speak, or at least the man whom I admired. He thought that surveillance and the CIA, their major function was to provide good intelligence for good policy that would protect the national security of the United States. I'm not sure he would see this kind of situation, this kind of mega complex as the kind of thing that he would be in favor of, because I think there's too much of an opportunity for abuse. And I'm not saying we don't need these organizations, but the mega part of it is just kind of scary. You know, I think you see that reflected in some of the comments that have been made by my fellow colleagues here today.
Well, Jay Stanley, your ear is close to this battle, I guess you'd say, or this issue all the time. And I want to ask you the same question that I asked Dr. English. Does the younger generation really stand a chance to be able to corral, if I can use that word, or change, or whatever is necessary to keep surveillance in the mode of what Dr. English had just talked about? Do they stand a chance?
Well, I think the younger generation is going to have to fight for their rights, as previous generations of Americans have, and as we older generations are trying to do, and are you know, I think the younger generation is starting to, many of them. And, you know, I think that we really are in an era where things are changing so fast with these powerful new technologies that are allowing kinds of surveillance to be done that were never possible before. Routine surveillance, automatic surveillance with computers, sifting through communications, looking for keywords, making judgments about who's quote-unquote suspicious. And I think that we have these giant agencies which are like sorcerer's apprentice. If you don't put very, very tight controls on them, they spin out of control. They'll start watching everybody, and even though it's really not a great way to fight terrorism. It doesn't make me feel safer living here in Washington, D.C. area to know that they're trying to boil the ocean. Instead of focusing on known terrorists and known evidence and working outwards using good old-fashioned law enforcement and intelligence techniques, which are the ones that have always been proven successful, they are trying this new system, which is to boil the ocean, sift through a country of 300 million people, store all of their communications records. That's the approach to fighting terrorism that we're often seeing, which is store everything on everybody in case you might need it, put computers in place to sift through it, to make judgments about it. The problem is that there are errors, there are abuses, people who are activists, like Occupy activists and, you know, pro-abortion, anti-abortion activists, political activists across the spectrum tend to be targeted first. Exercising, even though they're completely peaceful, don't have any plans to break the law and are just exercising their First Amendment rights. And I think that if we sit still and we do nothing and we don't put any new controls on these giant agencies and put new rules in place to govern these technologies, then the time-honored traditions of privacy that we've inherited through the Anglo-American legal system and our culture will erode. It's a battle that needs to be fought.
Well, as Dr. English mentioned about the ACLU having gone through a period of time when it defended both sides and still is looked upon with some skepticism in a lot of different ways, do you feel in your involvement there and your peers that are working with you that the ACLU is able to work effectively in this particular issue, or are you guys really stunted?
Well, it's a really good question, and it's interesting because, you know, we do take up very controversial causes. We take up the causes of parties who are not popular to defend. We don't defend the rights because we like them. We don't like Nazis. We don't agree with Nazis on anything, but we defend the right of Nazis to speak because we're not defending them because we like them. We're defending them because we're defending all of our rights by defending their rights. But in the privacy area where I work, it's very interesting because we tend to get support from liberals and conservatives. For example, I do a lot of work on domestic surveillance drones, and we've seen a tremendous outpouring of concern about aerial surveillance drones, and we've seen legislation proposed in over 40 state legislatures, which is an amazing thing to happen in such a short period of time. And in almost every case, that legislation has either been proposed by a coalition of the left and the right or by the conservatives alone. And so, you know, here in Washington, I attend meetings with people who don't like the ACLU on a variety of different positions that we take, but on the surveillance and privacy issues, we do see eye to eye often with people who don't agree with on other things.
You're listening to part two of our generational discussion on surveillance. Both parts one and two are now posted on the Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow program page at KUAR.org, as well as on iTunes and Facebook. Now, back to our discussion.
Well, given that our program is generationally focused, one of the things that crossed my mind is the fact that each generation ends up with a moniker of some sort. Dr. English's generation and before, some of them called the GIs. There was the silent, the boomer generation, the Xers. Then we come along to the younger generation that was given a name not too long ago about the millennials. I'm kind of wondering as time goes on, and let me ask you this, Adam, as time goes on, do you think that maybe that name may get changed to maybe the surveillance generation?
Absolutely not, because that would admit that they're being surveilled. That's just being too candid about what's going on.
But it's true.
I think one of the founding principles of spying is you don't let someone know you're spying on them until you get caught lying about it to Congress, and then a man flees to Hong Kong to tell everyone about it.
But, well, before we get out of our conversation, I want to get out of the way. Is there something that you guys wanted to bring up? Dr. English, there's a part of this discussion we haven't talked about that you'd like to bring up.
I think it's been a good discussion so far. I think, again, one of the key questions for me is you need some of these institutions for good policy, because it's a Hobbesian world out there. It's a dangerous world. But the kind of people who operate them, I think, need to be, obviously, people who are aware of the democratic norms and have a sense of our democratic tradition and our legal traditions and things of that sort, because there's just really too much of an opportunity for abuse. I think that's, you know, really a very key question for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jay Stanley, let me give that same question to you. Is there something that in our discussion you thought was important we haven't talked about?
2 points that occur to me on the subject of generations. I think that, you know, people often say that the younger generation doesn't care about privacy, that they're willing to put all kinds of outrageous things up on the internet and so forth. And I think that, you know, I don't know, maybe that's true to an extent, that younger people are more freewheeling, but privacy is not about keeping secrets. It's about having control over what you disclose about yourself. So, you know, there are some people who are happy to post nude pictures of themselves online, and there are other people who don't like to show, you know, a naked ankle. I think that the key question is, do you have control and choice over what you reveal about yourself, or is that choice being taken away and things are being revealed about you without your knowledge or permission or consent? And then I guess the second point about the generations, I think that one difference there is between the generations is that I think that the baby boomer generation has a much better memory, historical memory, of a lot of the abuses that took place during the Cold War with J. Edgar Hoover you know, spying on Martin Luther King, with the FBI and police agencies not just spying on political activists who weren't breaking any laws, but disrupting them, using agent provocateur to sort of, you know, frame them as violent when they weren't, trying to break up activists' marriages. I mean, really awful things that went on, abuses that went on, a lot of it because of, as Dr. English said, secrecy. And I guess my third and final point would be that we are in a bit of a crisis when it comes to government secrecy, which has really gotten out of control and has lost legitimacy. The government cries secrecy when a whistleblower reveals something that it doesn't want the American public to know about, but the government officials themselves are leaking secret information every day that helps them. Nobody gets prosecuted. No investigation goes forward. Somebody leaked the war plans for Afghanistan 5 or 6 years ago, and there was no investigation because it helped the government. So the laws are being very unequally applied, and there's an enormous amount of information that is kept secret from the American people that should not be kept from the secret from the American people. And it is a real danger to our democracy, and I think that that is much of what inspired Mr. Snowden to do what he did.
Let me go back to you, Dr. English. Is surveillance a critical issue?
Yes, I do. I think it is a critical issue because I think we all have a reasonable expectation of privacy. Jay said, I think, a very good point when he said we need to be in control of our own freedom, so to speak. And when people are gathering data on you and mining data on you and that sort of thing, it can be obviously abused by corporations, of course, and certainly by the government. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that definitely is a concern. You know, the potential for abuse down the line could indeed be great. You know, again, coming back to that point where, you know, we need good intelligence, to make good policy decisions. But, you know, I think what Mr. Snowden did, and he's obviously not gotten a very good name about this because of the way it's been treated in the media and by the government and so forth, is that I had no idea that, quite honestly, that the NSA was doing all of this, to be honest with you. I had no idea that this amount of sifting and mining and boiling of the water was really taking place. And that was a clear alert to me that, something needs to be done here. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a clear alert to a lot of the public, too, that, you know, maybe this is a danger down the line. And
is that the way you see it, Jay Stanley? Is it a critical issue?
It is a critical issue. It gets to the heart of our democratic freedoms, the relationship between the government and the individual, how much power the individual has and how much power the government has. I think that in our country, people are supposed to watch the government, but the government is not supposed to watch the people unless it has real evidence that you're involved in wrongdoing. It shouldn't be monitoring you or looking over your shoulder or examining your life or your certainly not your phone calls or your emails to see what you're talking about or who you're talking to. It really violates our culture's oldest traditions of privacy and the relationship between the individual and the government. So these new technologies are arriving that make so much of this possible, and the government is deploying them as fast as it can. And before anybody has a chance to debate it, not that we can debate it because so much of it's kept secret at the federal level, I think that it is a critical issue that goes to the heart of our political system.
Well, Adam Lancy, let me give you the last word in our discussion today before we wrap up. Is it a critical issue for young generation? How do you feel about it?
Yes. Whether my generation realizes it or not, surveillance is an extremely critical issue, and it's partially because of what I said before, where communication is how we're going to move into the future. And to really get to I think that at the very, very crux of the matter, surveillance is about behavior modification. It's about control. If someone knows they're being watched or listened to and all of their information is being stored somewhere, they're going to be less likely to engage in any activity that's seen as dissenting from status quo. When our communications are surveilled, we're less likely to be honest about what we feel, or we're possibly in fear of organizing any kind of movement that may cause this political change. Therefore, surveillance in America in the 21st century is really a cog in the machine of the government. It is a continuance of government measure, essentially, is what I think. I think it's one of the most critical issues of my generation. And to really be frank, I mean, I am optimistic about the potential change that my generation can make, because I do think that I would like to believe that we are more creative than our predecessors. I mean, after all, I would hope that my child is more intelligent and creative than I am. I'm terrified. I'm really terrified knowing what's going to happen with drones in the next 20 years. I just read a congressional paper by our legislative attorney. He says that in the next 20 years, there's going to be 30,000 drones in the air over American soil. And here's what this means for us. Have you heard of GATE technology, GATE surveillance technology, GATE recognition technology, G-A-I-T? Okay, for those listening that don't know, this is the way you walk is like your fingerprint. It is something unique to you. It is a characteristic that only you have. And this is a new technology that's being pioneered by universities, no less. Again, now we have an example of institutions of knowledge being exploited for the industrial war complex, like you were talking about, Mr. Stanley. There is a day in the future coming, if we continue this path, that no one will be able to step outside your house without there being a document of who you are, where you were going, who you were with, how fast you're driving, what you're doing, what you're wearing, what you're carrying, etc. The reason that we do have something to fear, even if we're not doing wrong, is because all of this information is stored over time. The capability to store this information is getting bigger and bigger every year. And in the future, you know, you don't even have to do something wrong. All that's going to happen is maybe you come under suspicion by someone someday, even maybe by a false accusation. You are now under scrutiny. So what they can do is they can rewind the tape and go back in time and look at every single little thing you've done to paint you however they want in that context. And this is absolutely terrifying to me. We are talking about 1984, or so Orwell was 30 years off. But I want to leave on a good note, so I want to play one more thing here. So this song, a lot of people know this song. The drummer, his father was in the CIA. That's what this song is about. Now, it's painted, for pop's sake, it's painted in the context of an obsessed lover. So there you have it. You know, I mean, the information is really all there.
Well, folks, we've been talking about surveillance today, a very, very serious subject, and I'm glad to have been able to cover it in the way we have here. I hope you've enjoyed it. I know it's been probably on your mind, even as you've gone through your day-to-day activities, wondering whether or not you have been surveilled on in any way, shape, or form. My guest's been with me here today, speaking from that older generation, a guest we've had on many times, Dr. Art English. He's a professor emeritus of political science here at UALR. Dr. English, glad to have had you back with me here again today.
Thanks very much, Bill.
And then also in the studio has been Adam Lansky. He's has been one of the central figures in the Occupy movement here in Arkansas and has a bright future, I think, ahead in staying as an activist. Adam, thanks for being with us here today.
It's been a big honor, Phil, and thanks to everyone else for talking. It was so cool hanging with you guys.
And then from Arlington, Virginia, Jay Stanley is a senior policy analyst with the ACLU, and you can follow him if you want to go to his website, which I believe is aclu.org, isn't it, Jay?
Yes, and I added a blog called Free Future, which focuses on these surveillance technology issues.
Right, and I went through several of them there, and in fact, there's many, many, many of them, all of them very well written, and if you're at all interested in this topic of surveillance, you'd like to learn a little bit more, you can catch his site there. Jay, thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to part two of our generational discussion on surveillance. This has been the first time in all our years on the air that I've broken a topic into two segments. Truthfully, there was a lot to cover in this topic, and my guests were terrific. I hope you enjoyed the discussion, and remember that you can listen to both parts 1 and 2 on the Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow program page at KUAR.org.
Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow is a production of KUAR Public Radio, Little Rock.